in control. I've had issues with pornography and alcohol and with rage and with panic and with depression. So last night, I was in Walmart and I was shopping for camouflage shorts. And I looked and I looked and I looked and I found these camouflage shorts. These rock, right? Yeah. So I get on my cell phone and I try to find my wife because I knew she's somewhere in the store. I've got my little package with me. I got my little shorts on the little clip-on hanger thing, you know. Got it rolled up and got my cell phone out. So I've got both hands occupied. Where are you? I'm in the garden center. Okay, I'm heading your way. So I start to go her way and all of a sudden realize there is this humongous lime green ball that some kid has rolled into the men's wear department. It's right in front of me. And it's got little nubs on it. They kind of reach out and grab you, you know. And so I thought, well, I'll just vault that. I'll just jump right over that. And then I thought, no, I'll just step over it. I'll just step over it. So I got one leg over it, and all of a sudden I realized I'm in trouble. Because I realized that both of my feet weren't touching the ground. And I got to go one way or another, and there are people in the store, and I'm about to fall on my butt. So I was able to kind of rock and roll till I got to the other side, and then in a moment of utter and absolute disdain, I cow-kicked it back into the grocery section and walked on as if I meant to do all of that. So I have cool pants, but I have issues with big green balls trying to make me fall down on my butt. So, and I also have issues with my eyes tonight. These are not the right glasses. I can't see. Could you hold this for me, Ron? So you're going to catch me looking at my notes in a funny way. I don't want to take these off because then I can't see you. And you're so pretty. So I want to be able to see you. We are going to start. Okay, so we've been talking forever. I don't know, 6-8 years ago, Wayne started talking about God is at work in everybody all the time. And so when you spend time with him, you look for what God is doing, and then you participate in it. It's about the same time I started thinking, yeah, another way to say that would be love the person in front of you. Simply love the person in front of you. And both of us, I don't know what kind of pushback he's had, but I've had pushback on like, what does that look like? What does that even look like to love the person in front of you? How do I do that? It sounds really good. It sounds really righteous. It sounds really Jesus-like. But how do you love the person in front of you practically? How do you make a practice of doing that, of loving that person in front of you? And so I've struggled with it with the help of some of my recovery partners. I've talked to it with other people on staff here and just kind of tried to wrestle through what does it look like to love the person in front of you? And I really have decided that to love the person in front of you means that you completely see them and you completely hear them. You see who they are and you hear what they have to say. And it takes time and it takes respect for them and it takes intention. And it means you're going to inconvenience yourself from time to time. And it means that you're going to have to listen to some stuff that may be fluff and really doesn't involve who they are, but you need to listen to the fluff to get to the real stuff. So with that aha moment, I don't know, 6-8 months ago, it became clear in my mind. I thought, okay, so how do we listen to people? If loving the person in front of you means to listen to them, to see them for who they are, then how do you listen to people? Because there are good and bad listeners, right? You've had people in your life you wish they would have heard you and they didn't hear you, right? There are people in your life you wish they would have really seen you but they never saw you. Moms and dads, closest friends, teachers, caregivers. Never really heard who you were, never really saw who you were. So there's an art, there's a gift, there's a practice to to learning how to be a good listener and how to be one who sees somebody for who they are. So if we're wanting to love the person in front of us, one of the things that we want to do is we want to learn to listen. When I got in my very first 12-step group that met in one of the rooms off the Welcome Center 12 years ago, I remember some question in there said, if you have, what is like the weakest thing in you that you're cutting edge that you really need to work on? And hands down to me, I had to confess, I suck at listening. I'm a terrible listener. I went to college and seminary to learn all the answers. I was taught to speak. I was taught to teach and to preach. I wasn't taught to listen. They don't have a listening class in seminary. Really stupid. They need to have a listening class. They don't have a listening class. So all my life, I thought my job is to learn and then to speak. So when I got in recovery, I realized I suck at listening. I'm terrible at it. So I admitted outright to the guys in my group, I'm not a good listener, and I want to be, and I don't know how to get there. So over the last 10 or 12, 13 years, that's been on the table. It's just been out there. I want to learn to listen. So I've listened to you all and learned about listening, because some of you all are really good listeners. So I've learned from you how to listen. Not that I'm good at it yet, but I know things I didn't know 13 years ago about listening. So I kind of want to share it. So the two things, this, so we're starting a three-part series on listening. Where'd y'all go? We're starting a three-part series on listening. And tonight is, the first one is challenges to listening. And there are two others that we're going to get into. And that is that everybody has the core need to be heard and seen. And the other is loving the person in front of us always means seeing and hearing. This series is based all on that. And so tonight is why don't we listen? And the next time it'll be, what is this core need that needs to be heard and seen? And then the last one is, how do we see and hear the person in front of us? So tonight we want to talk about what are the obstacles, what are the challenges to listening? Can we just get real? Why do we suck at listening? Is that too negative? Why do we suck at listening? Why are we not good? Why don't we come out of the womb as good listeners? Maybe a few people do. Most people don't. So why do we suck at listening? So I've got five things. So you can keep track and watch your watch and think, whew, he's only got two more to go. We still got five, though. I'm at the top of the sheet. So here's why we suck at listening, I think. The first one is, okay. Let's preface it with this. You know you're going to meet with somebody. It's a casual meeting in the hallway, or you text and say, can we meet over coffee? You know you're going to have a conversation with somebody, whether it's just a spur of the moment or it's a planned conversation. You know you're going to have a conversation. So when you go into that conversation, you go into it with a certain, what does a conversation look like to you? What does a normal, natural conversation look like to you? So that's the way I'm going to approach this tonight, okay? So we suck at listening because, number one, we view each conversation as a chance for personal advancement. That's what this conversation is. I'm going to meet with so-and-so, and I'm going to utilize this conversation as some sort of opportunity for personal advancement. What I say is will always be more important than what they have to say. It will be more intelligent. It will be more creative. If I'm going to talk about where it hurts, my pain is going to be more grievous than their pain. My story is going to be more interesting than their story. My jokes are going to be funnier than their jokes. You know, I mean, it's just, what, do you assume that, Loretta? Do you see what I'm saying? So when I come to this conversation, it's my chance to get the first step. I'm going to get a jump up on them. I'm going to get ahead of them in this. And they will be the ones that benefit from this conversation because I have so much good to say. You know, I have entertaining things to say. I have interesting things to say. I have insightful things to say. I have studious things to say. I have endearing things to say. So they'll be the beneficiaries because I'm just that good. So I will advance in this relationship. When they leave this conversation, they will think more of me than they did when I went into it. I will advance. You see what I'm saying? Every conversation we have is a chance to advance with that person who's in front of us. So that's why I bring such a generous contribution of words. I thought I'd put it that way. Someone who's chatty has a generous contribution of words. Wouldn't it be funny if you said to them, somebody who talks too much, you can't get a word in edgeways, you could say, my, you have a generous contribution of words. That would make them think, maybe. When I was there, this is what I did. Y'all, I did this. Ask my wife. I never shut up. Sometimes I still don't shut up. Well, and why is this? I'm out to convince you that I am relevant. And I'm out to remind myself that I'm valuable. I'm going to utilize every conversation to advance myself in my own mind and in this relationship. Now just stop and think about that. So all other humans are means to my advancement. You're not valuable in and of yourself. You're only valuable is in how you can help me advance in my own mind, in my own heart, and in this relationship. I'm already nauseated. I mean, think about that. That's where I lived a lot of my life. Here's the number two. We view conversations as just one more voice in my head. This isn't everybody. These are more extreme cases. But a lot of us have so many inner demons that scream and talk all the time. Our minds won't stop. Our minds won't calm down. There's a constant conversation going on in our mind. I've had times in my life when I was so pressed, so frantic, that was the case with me. I could not shut off the voices in my head. Anybody been there? I mean, that is a terrible place to be. And so when we have a conversation with somebody, they just become one more voice in our head. And it's hard sometimes to distinguish what they're saying from what's going on in our head because there's so much busyness. You know, you can't sleep at night. They won't stop. You process. You process relationships. You process what you got to do at work. You process budgeting your money. You process your health challenges. You process everything. All these voices. And so when you talk to somebody, they just join the club. They just become one more voice. All of life centers around me. My pain, my desires, my impulses, my thoughts, my feelings, my beliefs, everything is about me, me, me. There are really extreme cases, and I don't see any, of course I can't see anything anyway. That's an advantage. But when I had my glasses on, I didn't see anybody here. But we have had people before here, and you know you've got people in your life, in your family, that when they enter a room, they're the only person in the room. In their mind, they're the only person in the room. I don't care what you have to say. I don't care what you try to bring to the table. I'm the only person here. My agenda is the most important. The voices in my head are the most profound and loud or whatever. I'm the only person here. So really, I'm the only one that deserves a chance to talk. So y'all just shut up and listen. I mean, we all have people in our lives like that. So we view conversations as just one more voice in our head. Here's the third one. We view conversations as a hurry-up buffet. I struggled all week with what do I call this one? A hurry-up buffet. And the best thing I could think of is they're not here tonight, and I wouldn't even care to name them, but Loretta once described somebody as a bag of squirrels. Yeah, she did. I'm blaming this on her. But so they're high energy and they're a little bit crazy, not psycho crazy, funny crazy.
And I love them.
Oh, yeah, we all love them. But she said, you know what they remind me of? A bag of squirrels. So I come into a conversation and I say something to you about somebody who's bouncing off the wall, they're high energy, and they remind me of a bag of squirrels, and I want to go on with the story. It's a fairly important story. But in that conversation, all you heard is the word squirrels. That's all you heard. That's all you heard out of the buffet of words that came out of my mouth. All you heard is the word squirrels. So suddenly you say, I saw a squirrel the other day. He was in a tree and he was eating a nut. And you know what? He dropped that nut on a bird and the bird flew away. And then the bird went over to a restaurant and they serve burgers there. And those burgers are the best burgers you've ever had. But they're not near as good as the fries. I think the fries come from Idaho. I'm not sure. But they cook them right there on the spot. You see what I'm saying? Have you ever talked with people like, they'll take one word you say and zoom, they're off to outer space with that one word. And you think, what? Whoa, I was telling you about this significant encounter I had with somebody, and now you're up a tree eating hamburgers or something. You know? But you're laughing, but I think you have people like that. You say one or two words and zoom, they're off with those, they take off with them. Or what happens a lot, I don't know that these two link up under the, see, a conversation is a buffet, but we're real guilty of this. Robbie, my wife and I are guilty of this. We've been married too long. And so we have this problem that I will start, it goes both ways, so I'm not blaming her. I will start a sentence and get halfway through it, and she'll think that she can complete it. It goes the other way, too. She'll start a sentence, and I'll say, don't even go there. I know where you're going with that. Everybody, you know what I'm talking about? The closer you get to somebody and the longer you're with somebody, you assume that you know where they're going with something. You're kind of trying to accelerate the conversation. Let's get past what I already know. I already know what you're going to say. Let's get past that to something we don't know. And what, 9 times out of 10, we'll both say, that's not where I was going. And yet we still do it. So some of us see a conversation, and this is almost silly, but some of us see a conversation as this, either just chase squirrels, you know, or I know where the accelerator is. I'm going to punch it, and we're going to get past the parts that aren't interesting to me because I already know what you're going to say. So it's kind of this hurry-up thing. It's this kind of frantic thing. It's don't sit down and really listen. Don't sit down and really care. It's just like, I don't know, kind of crazy. Just fast, fast, fast. So that didn't make much sense, did it? The squirrels and it kind of did. When I thought it up, it made sense. Anyway, that's number 3. We're getting closer to number 5. So here's number 4. We view conversation as a personal threat. Now, these last two get real. They really do. These last two are where I lived forever. And I have a hunch a lot of us lived here forever. But why is it hard to listen? It's because we view conversation as a personal threat. If I meet with you, and especially if we have some sort of history, we got a history together, and I meet with you, if I let you talk, I give you control of the conversation. And if I give you control of the conversation, in essence, I give you control of me. I no longer know what you're going to say. I no longer know where you're going to take the conversation. I no longer know how I'm going to respond. If I can keep it on the weather, I know how I'm going to respond to that. If I can keep it on sports scores, I know how I'm going to respond to that. But if you want to take it some deep, relevant, real way, I can't let you talk. I'm sorry. I don't know that I'm ready to go there. I don't know that I'm ready for how I might respond to that. So conversations become very threatening to us because to listen means to give up control. To really listen means to really give up control. It means to just sit there and say, the floor is yours, I'm not saying a word. Say whatever you need to say. I mean, this hits home to me. I don't know about you, but this hits home to me because I've lived there for a long, long time. When I said that 13 years ago in that step group, that I want to be a better listener, and I started thinking about it, I started processing it, I started talking to other people about it, that was the first realization that I made about myself. The reason I suck at listening is because I'm afraid to give up control to you, to let you talk. I can't do that. It scares me. That has been a huge step to take. That has been a huge step, especially with extended family, especially with people who you know have opposing political views or opposing theological views or opposing, you know, the important stuff. You know, they'd rather eat broccoli and I'd rather eat cauliflower. That's not real important. Well, it may be in your world. I don't know. Are you a vegetable connoisseur? I don't know. But you know what I'm saying. And these people you really care about, these relationships that are really important to you, you realize they may take this a place that I really don't feel comfortable going. So I can't let them talk. So I've got to keep talking. I've got to dominate the conversation. So that's number four. The room got really quiet. I feel different because that one hits home. Here's the fifth one, and it's another confessional on my part. I have to confess this is where I live. I used to view conversations with doubt and skepticism. Something happened several years ago that totally turned my world upside down. I've lived most of my life thinking that almost everybody was just half-assing it. They weren't trying their best. They might even have a weapon behind their back, gonna get me. They're not doing their part. They're not holding up their end of the load. They're probably deceitful. They're probably being manipulative. There's something evil inside them. They're not to be trusted. At the very least, they're to be doubted. You need to doubt most of what they say. Always doubt their motives. Always think there's a hidden agenda somewhere there. That's the way I lived most of my life. And I was very cynical. Dark. It's just dark. But that's where I lived most of my life. And at some point, I was faced with the decision, I either think people are trying to do their best or I don't. And when I tried to make that decision, there were so many yeah buts, you know. I think most everybody's trying to do their best. Yeah, but there's that one over there. And yeah, but there's that one over there. And yeah, but there's that case over there. And my mind was just busy with trying to think up 1,000 different reasons why I couldn't believe in people. Why I had to keep doubting people. Why I had to keep being cynical and skeptical of people and afraid of people. I don't know what happened to flop me over to the other side. I don't know what happened. I can't tell you. It was magic. I don't know. But I finally came to the place where I thought, I think almost everybody on the planet is doing the best they can with the hand they were dealt. I've just chosen to believe that. Do I just leave my doors unlocked and lay my money out on my front porch and, you know, no. I'm not that naive. I'm not that stupid. But in my conversations with people, I no longer go into it thinking God is not at work in your life. You have ill intentions. You are probably deceiving me in some way or another. I just don't do that anymore. I don't filter what they're saying through those filters. I say, I think they're doing the best they can. None of us have walked in anybody else's shoes. None of us know the hand that other people were dealt. You could be married to them for your whole life and you still don't know the hand they're dealt. You can think you know, but you can't. You can't understand somebody else's emotional makeup, You can't understand all the aspects of their backstory. You can't understand their IQ level, their mental processes. You can't understand their personal relationship with God. You can't. You can try, but you can't know that. And so not knowing, my assumption was always, it's not good. And now I've chosen just to assume they're doing the best they can with what they've got. It's changed everything about the way I listen to people and, you know, just my conversations now. I go into it literally looking for the God I know is there. Looking for the love and the spark of goodness that I know is already there. Looking for the work of grace that's already been doing its stuff that's there. I go in looking for that. I count on it being just as guaranteed as I do gravity when I climb out of bed. There's not a single morning I get up and say, I wonder if I'll float to the ceiling today. I wonder if it'll still work. Every day I get up and know that when I slide out of bed, I will go down and my feet will hit the floor and I can make my way into my little bathroom and brush my teeth and do all that stuff. Because gravity is a guarantee. And so I thought, God is at work in that person. It's a guarantee. I already know He is. So my hope is not that He's at work. My hope is that I can see where He's at work. There's a huge difference. Did you catch that? My hope is not that God is at work in that person. My hope is that I'll be able to see what I already know God is doing in that person. There's a huge difference there. The cynicism kind of leaks away. The mistrust leaks away. Now I can approach them in a different way. I don't know if this helps you. It helped me to put down on paper the challenges and threats and obstacles that I have faced to good listening. Because if I want to love you, if I want to love the person in front of me, I want to make sure that I'm learning how to listen. And not just hear the words you say, but hear what you mean. Hear what your heart is saying to me. Because to me, that's the way you love the person in front of you. So I want to know, what is it that impedes that? What is it that stands in the way? If I can know that, then maybe I can deal with some of that. You know, get rid of some of that. I have no idea what time it is. I've still got a few minutes. So anyway, I hope this is helpful. And just know that, dadgum, you're pretty. You were just a blur. Just so you remember, next week we're going to talk about the innate human need to be seen and heard. And really, that's not a desperate thing, that's a beautiful thing. Beautiful, beautiful thing. That we really do want to be seen and heard. Even the shy ones. Everybody wants to be seen and heard. Not in a stand on the table and dance way. But maybe some of y'all would like to do that. We'll play a little tune for you if you will. But in a real, genuine way, we want to be seen and heard. And then the last one will be, okay, so how do we do that? And we'll have some real practical ways. The third lesson will be, so how do we learn to really be good listeners? Can you imagine the difference you make in the world if you go out into the world as a better listener? Can you imagine the impact that you can make? It's enormous. It's enormous. All right, we're going to play one more song.